This episode of El Paso Primetime is part two of a series on elder law and originally aired on April 20th, 2010.
It is health that is real wealth, not pieces of gold and silver. Mahatma Gandhi. I'm Florence Schwein, your El Paso Primetime host, and today my guest is Stephanie Townsend Ayala, an attorney and counselor at law and a senior advocate. She has her own firm, Stephanie Townsend Ayala, PLLC, in El Paso. Oh, thank you for coming in. I'm just delighted to have you.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It's going to be fun to talk about Medicaid today, and especially in view of some of the new legislation, and we're all wondering about what on earth healthcare is going to be like in the next few years.
Yes.
And it certainly affects many of us who are in our third age, that active age, and later. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you so much. And I'm really excited to be here because there is so much going on. There's so much good things to say. People have been asking me quite a bit, how is Medicaid going to be changed? Medicare and Medicaid, how will it be changed by the new health care plan that's in place? Thank goodness. I'm here to tell you that it's going to be improved because there will be more people who have private insurance coverage. There will be less of a need for Medicare and Medicaid. Ergo, those who actually really and truly need it will have a larger pool to be able to use from. And frankly, it's not going to change that much other than the fact that I believe that both the Medicare and Medicaid systems will be better funded as a result of the health care program.
And maybe better managed because of all of this.
And I think that well, when what you, I don't know about that part of it because it's a federal program. Medicare and Medicaid are federal programs overseen by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS. And each state administers the program the way it sees fit within certain parameters. Therefore, in terms of management, it may depend a lot on what state you live in. That's my point, is that the state of Texas constantly is in competition with Mississippi, I think, to be the worst state when it comes to management of Medicare and Medicaid systems. So that tells you right there that it is a dangerous state in which to be elderly or disabled.
Oh, so maybe I should move to New Mexico?
You know what? If you need nursing home Medicaid, I'd say your chances of getting it are a lot better in New Mexico than Texas. Because in New Mexico, when I call a case worker there and say, hey, I've got a client at a nursing home there. Where are they? What do we do? How can we help them? The application is 3 pages long and they're helpful within weeks. The benefits are flowing, blah, blah, blah. Here in Texas, if you call the dad's office here and say, hey, I need Medicaid. My husband's in the nursing home. They're going to send you a thick packet. The first 5 pages will say, if you apply, we're taking your home. We're going to take your home. We're going to take your home from you. We're going to take every asset you have if you even apply. I mean, if you apply, we're taking all your assets.
That's pretty
intimidating. That's the first 5 pages. That's right. The first 5 pages. And then after that is a 12-page application process that actually requires about 1.5, 2 inches sometimes thick packages to apply, just to do the means testing application process. For an 85-year-old woman who has an 87-year-old husband in the nursing home, how hard do you think that is? There's huge loops. And the state of Texas, oh, they're so great. They keep coming back 3, 4, 5 times saying, we want to look at more bank statements. We want to see more information. We think you have this or we think that. And so they keep coming back. People are intimidated by the government, first of all. And El Pasoans and people along the border especially, they're not accessing these funds the way other areas are, because we're a very humble community. And if we believe the state, if it's the government and they tell us something, we think it's true. And I'm here to say, if the government has denied you for nursing home benefits, don't believe them. Don't believe that you don't qualify. What they've done is they've followed a policy that is cold and cold-hearted, in my view. It makes it difficult for people. It's a maze that you have to navigate. And most people get tired along the way and just stop. The state of Texas depends on that. That's how they've planned to cut Medicare and Medicaid spending, and they have. They've cut it drastically. And it's amazing what the state of Texas has done to stop the flow of benefits to those people who deserve them.
Well, one of the things that we probably should mention is that Medicaid isn't only for people of a certain age, that sometimes people are on Medicaid because of their particular circumstances.
Right. There's the types of Medicaid for people who are poverty-stricken, and then there's the Medicaid for those who are elderly and disabled. and the people who are disabled, and you don't have to be poverty-stricken in that. Mm-hmm. You can be middle class in that point.
Who actually determines in Texas whether or not you're eligible?
It's a caseworker who has probably 150 cases sitting on their desk, who may be making about $18,000 a year, who has maybe 3 weeks or 6 weeks of training, who doesn't understand the law. And by the way, they have to, in those few weeks of training they get, they have to totally understand a 5,000-page handbook. And those pages are constantly changing. The state of Texas, Department of Aging and Disability Services, doesn't have to go to the legislature to change rules that terribly impact my clients. They can just issue edicts. For example, a few years ago, somebody really brilliant in Austin said, well, in West Texas, you can't supplement your files, packets anymore. If you come and you apply for Medicaid for a nursing home, mm-hmm. and we need something like a bank statement's missing, or you're missing a birth certificate or something, you are going to be denied automatically. You're automatically denied. Now you have to go through the entire appellate process. You are not allowed to supplement your file. Well, that's amazing because the government lets them supplement the file, but they wouldn't let us supplement our files. So, you know, they were holding a stick against us. And before you knew it, the Medicaid appeals were stacked up on the runways and they had to undo that edict and say, oh, no. Now you can supplement files again.
That means you can put it back in.
But in that period of time, my poor clients were having to pay me all kinds of money to do appeals. That's not right. That's not fair. That's wrong and oppressive. And what you're doing is you're picking the bones of these elderly and disabled people, and you're taking their homes, telling them you're going to take their home when you won't. They even violate, in my view, the Federal Fair Debt Collection Act. Because the Federal Fair Debt Collection Act says you cannot tell. You are barred from telling somebody they owe a debt that they do not owe. State of Texas does it every day. Whenever somebody dies who was getting Medicaid, they send them a letter saying, we're going to take your house, whether or not it applies to them or not.
Yeah, to pay those Medicaid expenses.
Well, let me ask you something about that. Why do I have to pay them after I die if I was paying for 50 or 60 years while I was working, when they're taking the money out of my check every month or every 2 weeks? And then I have to pay again after I die? Well, that doesn't seem right. And, I mean, I understand you don't want to have millionaires getting these benefits. But seriously, along the border and in Texas, come on. These are people who have very humble $30,000 homes. And these are people with nothing. And they are being threatened with the taking of their homes.
So let's kind of define some general benefits that Medicaid really does give us and then dig back into it a little bit.
Okay, let's say there's home health care benefits. There's a Medicare that's a Medicare benefit and some Medicaid, the community-based alternatives, mm-hmm. where up to 40 hours a week you can get of home health care services. Now, if somebody needs 24/7 care, obviously, the CBA or community-based alternatives isn't going to do you any good.
It's not enough
care. It's not 24/7.
Right.
There's something in my language and in my area of practice, one of the things we talk about is ADLs, activities of daily living, toileting, bathing, dressing, eating, taking medications, transferring. Which ADLs do you need help with? How many ADLs do you need?
And transferring is just maybe moving from a chair
to a wheelchair. Or to the toilet or mm-hmm. something like that, transference. Mm-hmm. And so there's Medicare benefits that will come into the home and help pay for some home repairs to retrofit the doors and put little handlebars and help you pay for a tub that's safe.
Or safety handles in the shower or
yes,
by the
ma'am.
Toilet.
That's right.
Things
so
like that.
That's right. The one thing it's important to remember, and I don't know who the wise guy was who decided that teeth were not a part of our health care or our bodies, but for some reason Medicaid will never cover dental for any reason whatsoever. So that's why Congress designed the program so you could have a little asset here and there that you could sell later on to pay for dentures or hearing aids or things that Medicaid will not pay for.
I guess teeth are considered maybe something that isn't really needed.
I don't know who the bright person was who decided to separate our teeth from our bodies, but that's the way the law is.
Well, if you have Medicaid coverage and I need to go to a nursing home, what is the benefit of my income and my resource limits? Where do I stand there?
Well, if you're a couple, if you're married, there's
now there's, this is a married couple.
That's right. And let's say your husband had to go to a nursing home. There's no limit on your income. You can make as much money as you want, and he can still get Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, if they have a technical income limit cap of $2,022 a month, but that income limit is easily overcome if your cost of care is higher than that, mm-hmm. with what's called a qualified income trust. See, a lot of people make application, and they make $2,023 a month, and the state of Texas denies them. They won't tell them, go get a Miller's Trust or a qualified income trust. They won't tell them that you can overcome this cap if you get this trust. They will not tell them how to help themselves. They'll just deny, deny, deny. And if you don't go see a lawyer, you'll never know of the tens and twenties of thousands of dollars of benefits that you could have been receiving, because the state of Texas makes sure even the caseworkers don't understand how qualified
income
trusts
work. Okay, now exactly what is this trust? Is it a trust that I put my income in?
That's right. It's a fancy bank account. Not your income. If your husband's in the nursing home, it would only be his income, not yours, just his. His income would flow through there, and then you'd write a check to yourself for the minimum monthly maintenance needs allowance, which is $2,739. So the first $2,739 that comes into the community stays with the community spouse, the spouse mm-hmm. who's still living in the home. And if there's any income above that, it goes to the nursing home.
Oh, I see. It's not really joint income at that point, is it?
No, it's not. They do separate it out. Like I said, you can have as much income as you want. There's no income limit for the community spouse.
What happens if the couple, both of them?
Then they're treated. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I had a case like that come in today, as a matter of fact, and they're treated like as if they are single people. Because a couple, if you're a couple, you can protect up to $109,000 in cash in the bank, $109,500. So, again, it's not a poverty program. It's not a welfare program. Why would you be able to, you know, protect $109,500 for the community spouse if it was welfare? So, but if you are single, then you can only protect $2,000 in cash. However, you can still protect a house of up to $500,000 value. You can protect a car of any value. You can have irrevocable funeral policies of any value, as long as they're irrevocable. And so there's lots of assets that you can invest your money in. You just can't have cash in the bank. And my job is to help you, you know, find ways of using. There's three magic words for your benefit. As long as you use the money for your benefit, you're fine. Unfortunately, I happen to know now that for your benefit includes going to the racetrack. So you
can. Oh, it does.
You can go to
some. Can I just bet on the colors of their scarves or something?
You just have to have proof of the receipts from the cash machine at Sunland Park Racetrack cash machine, because I was able to get some. This poor lady had dementia. She had spent quite a large sum of money at Sunland Park right before going into the nursing home, and we got approved. Now, so the lesson of that story is that you cannot give your money to your kids. You can't give it away. You can't give it to the church. You can't tithe. You can't donate to anything, but you can spend it at the racetrack.
Oh. Okay.
Just FYI.
A good bit of information. If you are just joining us, you are listening to El Paso Primetime, and I'm Florence Schwein, talking with my guest, attorney Stephanie Townsend Ayala, who specializes in elder law. Tell me something. How about alternatives to a nursing facility? Can an individual or a couple stay in their own home? And how can I protect part of my resources in order to do that?
Well, can you afford to create a nursing home at home? That's the question. Because if a doctor says you need skilled care, they don't say that lightly. Usually it's because your heart rates need to be monitored, your Coumadin levels need to be monitored. There's something that has to be blood sugar levels, something. There's some kind of an illness that's so chronic that you cannot be left alone unmonitored. And so if that's the case, if the doctor says, no, Florence, your husband needs to have 24/7 care, if you took him out of the nursing home, you'd be committing a crime, really. It'd be against medical advice, and technically the nursing home might have to call Adult Protective Services and report you, because he needs to get a certain level of skilled care. Now, certain people can afford to have 24/7 skilled care at home, but that's not paid for by Medicaid, and it's not paid for by Medicare. There's no way to get benefits for that. You have to pay. It's privately funded only. The only option, if under the Medicaid program, is to go into skilled nursing.
But Texas does have a program by which the state can be reimbursed for payments made on behalf of Medicaid recipients.
Oh,
is that
yes.
so?
Yeah, it's one of the worst tragedies to happen.
It's called MERP?
Medicaid Estate Recovery Program. And I've said this many times before. My family's lived on the border over 150 years, and there's been a lot of terrible atrocities during that time. And I consider the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program one of those atrocities. What the state is saying is that if you're the elderly and sick and disabled and you get the benefits that you are owed that you've been paying into the system for all your life, then we're going to come take all your assets when you die. How do you think it sits with an 86-year-old man who is told that he needs skilled nursing? He cannot live without skilled nursing. But they're going to take his house when he dies. This is a house he's lived in for 60 years, maybe. It's the last tangible asset of his existence on God's green earth. And, you know, he scrimped and saved and sacrificed to own that piece of dirt, the American dream. And he wants to leave it to his sons or daughters or grandchildren and to be told that the state's going to take it. And they're told that there's no other options. They're told there's no option to save it. There are options. If you talk to almost no one who talks to a lawyer has to have their home taken. If you get good legal advice, now, there's no one who gets good legal advice has to necessarily lose their home.
So what are some of the options?
There's something called a ladybird deed. It allows you, again, you have to pass, we talked about probate assets. What passes through the probate court? What do you have to go through the probate court, you know, when somebody dies? Usually it's the house. You have to change the title to the home. Usually it's the car, maybe some bank accounts because you didn't do the payment on death accounts properly, beneficiary designation forms properly.
But if you had executed your resources as your husband's name or and your name, does that or make a real difference
no,
there?
No, not necessarily. It's all dependent about what kind of deed you have and how you bought them as joint tenants with right of survivorship or just as joint owners.
I mean,
it has a lot of different, there are different implications depending on how you purchased it. However, my job as a probate lawyer and Medicaid lawyer is to make sure that nothing passes through probate, that we try to pass everything outside of the probate process. Because if you do pass through probate, then they're susceptible to the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program. You can't just give stuff away because you'll get penalized at a rate of $122.50 a day. So if you give a home away worth $75,000 because you don't want the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program to recover it, then you can't get Medicaid for at least 2 years. And the penalty time only begins running once you're in the nursing home. It doesn't start running when you give it away. It starts running when you're in the nursing home. So it's pretty intense.
And there's no
penalty.
Way you're going to know 2 years ahead, right?
Well, right. That's why give backs are allowed. That's why sometimes people give something away and then they have to go to nursing home. Then I have to tell Mijo to come back and give it back to Mom. Give that house deed back to Mom because, hey, she's not going to get Medicaid for 2 years unless you want to pay her nursing bill, give her the house back.
Oh, dear. Does this mean that some of our elders might be delaying or foregoing needed medical care?
It's happening every day. And that's the atrocity part, is we have elderly people who do not want to lose their American dream, who are going home and dying in filth and misery and squalor. Because they don't want to lose their home. We have people who are taking grandpa out of the nursing home because they don't want to lose the family home. There's just people living there who are going to be left homeless. And they're not told about other options. You know, these people will be pushed onto other welfare programs because the state is taking the home. They're pushing people onto welfare. Isn't that amazing?
It is absolutely amazing. I'm curious, though. How did this ladybird deed get its name?
I'm not pretending to be an expert on the deed. Obviously, Ladybird Johnson is a hero in Texas, and she was a wonderful woman who led a brilliant life and changed our state in many ways in honor of her, I believe. But I'm not an expert on that.
I met her once. And
she was a hero.
She was getting out of a tan station wagon that was full of red geraniums that she had just been shopping. And I was at the ranch, and she had just been shopping, and she was directing her Secret Service person to get those red geraniums out so she could get them planted in her yard. And so, what a delightful lady.
Yes.
Okay, let's go to the federal health care issue a little bit that we've been hearing about. and the shape it's taking. There's just so much legislation. Does anybody really understand it? I mean, have they
We're starting to. I think bits and pieces are coming out. I do know one thing. I was able to put my daughter back on my health insurance. She's in graduate school. Thank goodness. I know now that starting soon, there will be the pre-existing conditions will not exist. Thank goodness, because I have some injuries on my back that are pre-existing, and that's an issue. So, and I have to tell you, those who are opposing this healthcare reform, I believe their opinions are tainted by the arrogance of good health. If you've had catastrophic healthcare problems in your life among your close family members or yourself, then you are saying hooray, because there are family members I know of who have met their lifetime limit on certain issues. Like in Texas, until recently, Texas insurance companies were not required to cover autism. Why? Why is that? Why was autism not considered a healthcare? You could have a kid dying from autism and eating disorders. They're not considered to be healthcare issues. If that's the root of the problem, they could die from it, but it's not covered one bit. Or they'll have a $5,000 lifetime limit. How many days of hospitalization do you think $5,000 is going to get you?
I was in the hospital once for 23 hours, and it was $11,000.
So you can see how silly it is. Why is autism? Who decided that that's not covered? Well, insurance companies in Texas. So no, I think that the piles and piles of dead bodies of children who have died because they can't get insurance coverage and people who've died because insurance will not cover this or that procedure will be transformed into healthy, grateful voters with good memories.
I think one of the things that I've heard people say, who's going to make the decision, especially about the elderly people and who gets what service at what time?
Well, first
and
of all,
that's been a concern.
The end of life decision is made by you if you get your estate plan in order. You know, if you do your wills and your powers of attorney and your health care directive, nobody can pull the plug without your permission if you've done your documents.
And I believe once you told me about the five documents, we probably should go over that just a little bit.
There's a medical power of attorney for medical decisions, so somebody to make your medical decisions once you're too sick to make them. There's a durable power of attorney for finances, so somebody can pay your bills and handle your estate and sell your property if they have to while you're sick and you can't do it yourself. Then there's a health care directive, also known as a living will, which says whether or not you want to be kept alive by extraordinary means. Now, the person you name in the health care medical power of attorney is the person who enforces your health care directive or living will. So that's the person who has the right and power to make your end of life choice. It's don't believe all this weirdness about, you know, some people are spreading tomfoolery on the internet these days about how, you know, these doctors are going to decide to pull the plug. It's not. So, and then there's a declaration of a guardian in case of future need. That way, if a court is ever involved in your life, you can name who you love and trust the most, who should be in charge of your life. And then the fifth document is a will, and that decides, of course, who gets your money once you're gone.
Well, it's very important that we take the responsibility and actually do these things so that we can have control, basically, and so that we can make life better.
You would believe I had this one lady come in once with her son, grown son. He was about 60 and she was about 80 something. And she's like, I came here to make a will and I want to name my son as my agent and the power of attorney. And he's like, Mommy, don't even talk about it. Don't talk about it. Mommy, stop talking about making a will. Don't talk about power of attorney. I said, listen, she's doing you a favor. You're the one who's going to get stuck paying thousands of dollars. If mom has a stroke and suddenly can't speak, she's at the hospital. We have a HIPAA, a Health Information Privacy and Portability Act. So that says that they're going to say, where's your power of attorney when you get to the hospital? And you're going to say, I don't have one. And they're going to say, too bad. The doctor's going to decide. At that point, the doctor will decide. Because under Texas law, if you do not designate somebody to make your health care choices, it's the doctor who gets to decide. And it could be a doctor you've never met before. And so that's awful. And I try to tell this grown man to let his mom do this, that she was doing him a favor. So there's an issue of facing mortality.
And the issue of taking the responsibility. And within that is caring. caring for yourself and caring for the people you love.
You know, give your child or your spouse an act of love. Go make your wills and powers of attorney and go buy a funeral policy, an irrevocable funeral policy. Just do it. Don't make them choose your casket and don't make them choose your mode and method and manner of death.
How about,
or of burial, excuse me.
How about, you know, when we're talking about these things, often families will say, I want this and I want this and so-and-so is getting this. Not all of that really has to be put in a will, does it? Can you just kind of write their names on the bottom of it or on the back of the painting?
Yeah, my mom put little sticky tags on the back of her furniture and stuff. And what we do is I usually don't put it in a will because the wills, you know, you change. You sell stuff, you lose stuff, stuff gets stolen or something. So what we try to do is say you make a will and say who gets your real estate and who gets other personal property, and then you attach a list to it. Say, you know, this daughter gets my pearls, this daughter gets my gold, this daughter, you know, gets my, you know, collection, my fur coats or whatever. And so you can make that piece of paper, sign it and date it and attach it to your will, and it has full force of law.
Oh, and that would be much simpler because then you
can change it every day if you want to, like my
pearls,
mom does.
Those pearls might get broken.
I know when my mom would get mad at a grandchild, so she'd go and, you know, write them out. And then she'd like them again, so they'd put them back in. So that's how, you know, I think that that's very normal and typical. So everybody, you know, on my website, it says starve a lawyer, make a will. Because when you don't plan, you put money in my pocket. I'd really rather make my money by making wills than through a contested, ugly court battle.
And by doing that, you really have taken the emotion that happens within families sometimes at the point of death, and it's already decided and taken care of, and you can keep those other people happier.
You know, you will have a situation surrounding your death. Will that situation be ripe for litigation or will it not be ripe for litigation? Will litigation be discouraged by the situation? You decide while you're alive and while you're healthy.
I want to discourage litigation. So I am going to make you poor.
Thank you.
How's that?
I appreciate that very much.
So many people spend their health gaining wealth and then have to spend their wealth to regain their health. And I just want to say thank you very much, Attorney Stephanie Townsend Ayala, for your time, for your energy, your expertise, and helping us to understand that we really must take steps to be informed and plan well for ourselves and our loved ones.
Thank you so much.
I am also grateful to Dennis Wu for his production skills and planning well to make this program possible. I'm Florence Schwein for El Paso Primetime.
This episode of El Paso Primetime is part two of a series on elder law and originally aired on April 20th, 2010. If you missed any part of this episode or the first part of the 2010 conversation on elder law, please visit our website, ktep.org, then click on the Listen menu button, then the Archives menu to look for El Paso Primetime. If you have a topic or concern you'd like the El Paso Primetime team to research as a program, email us via the Contact Us section of ktep.org. Title it El Paso Primetime. El Paso Primetime is a production of KTEP, all rights reserved. Any use of any show broadcast on KTEP or any part thereof may not be used without the express written consent of the producers, networks, and or KTEP. Louis Signs and Perspectives is up next. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time for another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm going to go to the hospital.